Epilogue. The first signals came in from long-range augurs on the outrider Valya, hunting off the Thalian shoals. From there, they were passed back to the Primarch's battle group, two warp stages away on the edge of the Proxima Saltertius subsector, less than 2 weeks out from Terra. At first, the provenance was doubted, and so requests for confirmation were beamed straight back. When the Hrafnical itself detected fleet mass warp wakes, that settled the issue. The flagship was taken into full battle alert, as were its 17 escorts, administratum liaison craft, and sundry auxilia transports. For the wolves, patrolling the very edges of Lord Dawn's watch, their wounds from Alaxes healed and their warriors itching to take the fight back to the Warmaster on his own ground, the sensor spread was what had been expected for months. The first signs of the enemy, bearing down on the throne world at last. The Hrafnical issued requests to Terra for immediate aid, but did not wait for replies before breaking the veil. Only when the 6th Legion flotilla reached its forward coordinates and switched to finer-grained sensor sweeps did the identity of the incoming fleet become clearer. Thralls ran test after test, not believing what they saw, before the tidings were eventually deemed reliable enough to be given to the Primarch. The evidence was shunted to the bridge stations, where the Sensorium Master, after checking again, finally signed them off and headed up, warily, to the command throne. Leman Russ took the data slate and studied it for a long time. Eventually, he lifted his frost-blue eyes from the runes. "This cannot be true," he said. "We have checked and checked again, Lord. But why now? Why is he here now?"
The Sensorium Master shook his head.
"I cannot tell you. The contacts are still 3 days away." Russ stood, and the true wolves at his feet rose too, snarling and whickering. A look like breathing thunder crossed his flushed face, and his right hand reached for Mjalnar's hilt. "Arm all ships," he growled. "Flay the engines, but get us to him ahead of any other. I will be the first one he sees." Already, menials were running to comply, and the Hrafnical's vast bulk began to turn, angling for the boost of plasma drives.
"Jagatai," spat Russ, striding to the edge of the throne dais. "Damn you, you should not have come back."
It took less than 3 days for the Hrafnical to cover the distance, imperiling the engines of its escorts as the flotilla thundered through the void. By the time the flagship reached the coordinates, every gunwale was open and every Thunderhawk manned and primed for deployment. The main lancers were keyed for immediate fire, and the entire battle group assumed attack positions. As the first of the real viewer data came in, orders cascaded down from the bridge, activating kill markers for the waiting hunt packs and identifying primary assault vectors. But no counter-deployment came. The 5th Legion, what remained of it, eventually limped into view, shields down, plasma drives operating on half power. The vessels were no longer arrayed in white. The passage through the deep warp had blackened the ship's hulls, coating them in a thick layer of carbon. Russ had witnessed the white scars assembled for war at the height of the Great Crusade, and the spread of warships had been twice this size, glittering in ivory, gold, and red. What remained was battered, diminished, scraping along on burned-out engines. The flagship was gone. At the forefront was a line battleship with the ident Lance of Heaven, its flanks bearing scars like claw marks. The rest of the fleet came behind it, marker lights flickering intermittently, thrusters glowing dimly. Both sides came to a halt, separated by less than 100 kilometers of open space. 6th Legion guns locked onto targets, fixing points of weakness, of which there were many. No White Scars guns fixed targets in return, and the ranks of ships hung in the void. Silent. Broken. Russ watched them carefully, scouring the forward vessels for signs of movement. They outnumbered his battle group heavily, but looked in little condition to fight.
"Have they made contact?" he demanded.
Grimnar Blackblood, his huskarl, shook his head.
"Nothing yet."
Russ pushed clear of the command throne.
Train lances on the lead vessel, aimed at the bridge. Make ready to disable.
As the thralls hastened to comply, a warning rune lit up on the consoles ahead.
Lord, they are attempting to establish a teleport locus. How many?
Just one.
Russ snorted a raw laugh.
He has gall. I'll give him that.
He drew his frostblade, and the naked metal gleamed coldly.
Let him come.
The Harafnacle's forward void shield coverage was lowered, just for a moment. A second later, a lone column of ether light crackled down from the bridge's vaults, hitting the deck a few meters ahead of Russ's position. The blaze flared, guttered, then cleared, revealing a tall, lean figure standing at the heart of it. The Khan bore no weapon. His armor was gored deeply, blackened like his ship's. His helm was gone, revealing a blood-streaked face, his long hair disheveled. Initially, it looked as if he had trouble standing, but he steadied himself, pushing his shoulders back, meeting Russ's gaze. Seeing him again, all Russ felt was fury. He poised to launch forwards, to wheel Mjolnir around his shoulders, ready to plunge it into the chest of the one who had left him to die in the void. The frostblade felt light in his hands, apt for murder. Yet he did not move. The Khan did not move. They faced one another, Wolfking and Warhawk, separated by silence.
Do you know, my brother, how many of my sons died at Alaxis?
Russ growled eventually, forcing the words through clenched teeth. When the reply came, the Khan's voice was as it ever had been, resonant, heavily accented, measured.
We had to be sure, he said. Sure!
Russ closed the gap between them, keeping his blade unsheathed. The Khan was almost a head taller, yet leaner, and carrying deep wounds. At the edges of the throne dais, 100 bolters remained trained on the White Scar's master, but neither Primarch paid them any heed.
And did you find that surety? Do you still name me the Butcher of Prospero?
The Khan's gaze never wavered.
I saw your work, and I traveled beyond it. Yes, I found surety, but if you are looking for blood debt, then I have none to give you. For we have paid our own price.
Russ came right up to him then, their faces now a hand's breadth apart.
I often thought of what I would do, what I would say, were we to meet again, he snarled. Many name you as a traitor in the palace, Jagatai. You know this? I could kill you here, where you stand, and few would mourn. That would be my blood debt satisfied, and I could stand before the ghosts of the slain and tell them I avenged them. I bring no weapon, brother, the Khan said coolly. Strike me if you wish, but know that I come through the fires of hell to bring my sons to terror. No one, not you, not Horus, not even our father, will prevent me from bringing them to where they were destined to be.
There was the old arrogance again, bleeding so casually out of his brother's words. For a moment, it merely stoked Russ's long-nurtured anger, goading him to finally swing the blade, to enact the retribution he had imagined many times before. But then, the absurdity of it pricked at him. A cold smile crept across his blunt, scarred lips. The smile broadened, and he began to chuckle. First a low, snagging growl, then a full laugh. Russ threw his head back and roared his mirth.
Ha-ha! You always were a pompous bastard, he said. You come to my halls as a beggar and speak as if you owned them. Who else would dare it?
The laughter subsided. Finally, he sheathed his blade. All across the bridge, bolters were lowered.
It would make me feel better to give you a fresh scar to remember me by, Russ said. You might learn from it, but you look half dead already, and I have no wish to blunt my sword edge on your scrawny neck.
The Khan shot him a wintry smile.
Save it for those who come at my heels.
Russ's face became serious.
It will not be long. Malkador will welcome your blades, if you can make your peace with him. There are never enough loyal legionaries for his liking.
You will come back with me, then?
No, not yet.
Russ shook his head.
It is best we remain apart, I think. I'm still angry with you, brother, and may remember it again. In any case, I am caged here, and there are battles waiting in the void. Horus's forces are gathering for their final attack. There are reports of traitor movement from across the Segmentum, even as far as Yarant.
The Khan nodded.
Then I will wait for you at the palace. I told you I wish to fight beside you again, just as we were meant to.
Be assured, said Russ. The day will come.
In the lower reaches of the Lance of Heaven, the Storm Seers kept vigil. Arvida's body lay in the center of an etched circle, surrounded by braziers. The sorcerer had been placed on his back, still in full armor, for those who had borne him down from the bridge had been unable to remove it. Incense curled up over his prone outline, dark in the gloom of the coals. Powder trails had been thrown across the ceramite, earth brown and russet red, tracing out sacred shapes to ward against the dark. In the final moments of the warp passage, with the legions crashing return into real space, the sorcerer had collapsed. As the last echoes of the Empyrean still rang from the high vaults, the Storm Seers moved to revive him, only to recoil when his body began to rebel. Fluids, black and lurid pink, had forced themselves between the gaps in his battleplate and run across the 15th Legion sigils he still wore. His limbs had spasmed, and a throttled gurgle had spilled from his vox grill. Naran Bata had overseen his removal then, and they had carried him swiftly down to the chambers of the Zadian Aga, where wards were drawn across his shuddering body and ancient words of Yaksha banishment spoken over him. Slowly, the bodily changes stilled. Arvida never regained consciousness, though, and was tended through the long hours by those he had guided through the ether's depths. When the wolves came, a guard was placed on the chambers, and by order of the Khagan, none of them ever got close to the last son of Magnus. When the packs left again for their ships, the vigil was resumed. The chants persisted, over and over, through the nominal night and day, accompanied at all times by the twist of smoke and the aroma of sacred oils. Now, as preparations for the final stage to Terra neared completion, Naran Bata resumed the watch again, relieving his brother Zadyin Aga Osk. The two of them stood over the body, scanning for any sign of change.
We cannot halt it, admitted Naran Bata at last.
Osk nodded.
Then it will return soon? It already has.
The Stormseer reached into a brass bowl, pulled out blessed dust from the plains of Chogoris, and scattered it across Arvida's breastplate. The ceramite curves were over-swollen, as if a mass of flesh pressed up underneath them, striving to break free.
How long did he suffer from this?
Asked Osk.
Naran Bata smiled.
If he had wanted to keep it from us, perhaps he could have done so forever, he said. I only wonder that Yashugai did not see it. But what is to be done? Can he be taken back to Terra? What else is there? Yet he is 15th Legion. If it is found...
Osk was interrupted by a soft pulse from the door lock, cycling through a ciphered entry code. Both Stormseers turned swiftly, moving to interpose themselves between the body and the portal.
Who comes? Demanded Naran Bata.
The door slid open, revealing a man, a mortal, in a close-fitting body glove and thick damask cloak. He was not of the Legion and had a dark-skinned Terran face. Naran Bata opened his fist, and incipient flickers of psychic force rippled over the ceramite gauntlet.
Declare yourself, he warned.
The man lifted his arm slowly, showing he was unarmed.
This is the one, he asked.
the Proserpine sorcerer. I said, declare yourself.
Khalid Hassan, said the man, peering past them at Arvida's body. Chosen of Malkador, I came out with the wolves, for we had received auguries.
Does he live?
Naranbata kept the gauntlet raised.
He is one of ours. If even the Sigilite wishes him harm.
Harm? Asked Hassan. Harm?
No, my lords, you misunderstand this. He is sick, we know it. You cannot cure it. My master can help, though, and he wishes very much to. I do not think you know just what you have here. Believe me, we would not permit you to let him die. How did you get on this ship? Asked Osk. That is my business. I would have done it openly, but you will appreciate the difficulties. If Lord Russ were to discover what you are keeping here.
He will never do so.
No, quiet. Hassan lowered his arms. Listen, you need do nothing now. There are more traveling with me, and they can help. It can all be done quietly, even if the wolves circle you all the way to Terra. You will be taken to the palace. The Sigilite will be waiting. He will speak to the Khan. All will be made clear then, but for now, just for now, do not obstruct this. Allow help to be given.
Hassan placed his hands together.
There is no deception. We all wish for the same thing.
Naranbata hesitated. The man before him was unshielded. His mind was open. Finally, he lowered his gauntlet.
His sickness is advanced. You say you can help.
If you let us, but time is short.
But what interest is this to you?
Interjected Osk, his voice full of suspicion.
Because we have been waiting for him, said Hassan, looking past them at the unconscious Arvida, his expression close to reverence. And now, at last, he is here.
The suzerain had come through with the others. Now back in real space, it hung at the rear of the 5th Legion formation, out of place among the scarred ivory hull flanks, a last fragment of Eidolon's old battle group. With the war passage achieved and the encounter with the forces of Terra negotiated, Shibben had given over command of the ship to Yiman and withdrawn to the Palatine Blade's old chambers. Once the death rituals of the Brotherhood slain had been completed, Jochi's armor was sent there too. His pauldron, bearing the mark of the Mingan Kazurga, had been placed under the soft light of taper candles, and Shibben contemplated it for many hours. The losses had been heavy, stripping the heart out of his brotherhood. Few now remained who had fought with him on Chondax, fewer still with whom he could share any recollection of the past beyond that. He let his head lower, feeling the pistons stretch in his nape. The shackles had been badly damaged by the Prefector towards the end, and there would be no opportunity to attend to the mechanisms for some time. Not while the needs of the battered fleet and surviving crew were so pressing. That was no hardship, though. The pain was a pure one, and he found he was able to meditate through it now.
Perhaps I was always able to, he thought. Perhaps I did not try hard enough.
A chime sounded from the far side of the door.
Come, he said.
Ilya Ravalion entered, and Shibben greeted her, rising with a bow.
So, he said, they did not tell me you had made transit.
Ilya looked over at Jochi's artifacts.
Khal Damarg is complete? She asked.
For now.
Ilya moved closer, taking a seat on the leather-cushioned bench opposite the armor fragments. She looked almost ghostly in the low light, translucent with age and care, and her weight made no impression on the upholstery.
They kept their quarters more richly than us, said Shibben, rising and moving over to a mahogany stand, upon which crystal goblets and vials of wine had been placed.
Ilya gazed around at the dead prefector's finery, and her lips curled with distaste.
They are the most hateful of all, do you not think?
I will not argue. But how have you fared? How is the new flagship?
Ilya tried to give him a smile, but it was a weak attempt. Yashugai spoke to me from the void station. Did you know that? I do not know why he did, but now I cannot forget it. He seemed to wish me to keep living. For myself, I cannot say that I much agree.
These are not words I'm used to hearing from you.
No, no doubt. But I am weary to my bones, and my soul is sickening. Perhaps I shall recover. Maybe there is medicine on Terra for what ails us all.
Maybe.
Shibben reached out for a goblet, poured some wine, and offered it to her. Is it safe? She asked, doubtfully.
It will make your head foul, Shibben said. Nothing worse.
Ilya took it and drank deeply. Her hand shook. I shall miss him, Shibben, she said, suddenly, her voice catching.
I shall too.
He was fond of you. You know this? Shibben smiled.
He was fond of everyone.
But that was not true. Targutai Yashugai had been the one to take him from the plains, who had shepherded him through his ascension, and who had proudly watched his rise through the ranks with those calm, golden eyes.
You were right, Shibben said. Is that any comfort? You were right about Torgun. They tell me he was on the Swordstorm at the end. They tell me you had something to do with that.
A habit I learned on Prospero.
It grieves me that he stood alone.
Ilya shook her head. Do not grieve. I saw him before we were pulled out. He was already laughing. Shibben bowed his head.
That is good to know.
Ilya's trembling got worse then, and she drained the last of the wine. And what then for us now? She put the goblet down and reached out for Shibben's hand, an instinctive motion, almost childlike, clasping her fingers over his gauntlet and gripping it. I envy them both, she said. That is shameful, is it not? But it is true. Shibben reacted awkwardly, unsure how to respond to the sudden gesture of mortal need. Eventually, he brought his other hand across and placed it over hers, moving the armor as gently as he was able.
We survived, he said. There may yet be victory.
Can you see it? She asked, looking up at him, a kind of desperation in her frail face. Tell me, truly, can you see it? He could not lie to her. He could not lie to himself.
After all this, we remain ourselves, he said to her. Yashugai would have called that victory.
Ilya smiled at last, though tears still clung to the edge of her eyes. Yes, she said, keeping her hand locked in his. He would. The stars were strung out in a long swathe, the glittering band of the galaxy arcing across the high viewport. From the vantage, high up in the Lance of Heaven's observation tower, battered ships could be seen sliding gently across the wide vista. Some were 5th Legion outriders, all bearing the scars of their ether passage. Others were Space Wolf ships, in better condition, maintaining a discreet distance.
Do you think they will suffer us to make the final stage unwatched? Asked the Khan, standing before the high window.
Jubal, standing next to the Primarch, shrugged.
I would say not. Did the Wolf King not tell you his intentions? I did not ask. I was pleased enough to get off the ship without having to fight.
Jubal chuckled.
But he will go out to face the War Master sooner or later.
The Khan nodded.
So it seems. Such a waste. He could come back with us, bolster the defenses. Yes, but who can persuade the Lord of Fenris? His mind is made up.
The Khan sighed.
It changes nothing for us. We will fulfill the oath.
Jubal looked up at him.
There has not been the time to ask you, Kagan. You were on that place, Dark Glass. What was it?
The Khan thought on that. Maybe only Yashugai really understood. And yet, the machinery Jagatai had witnessed in the lower shafts had told him much. It had surely all been part of the same project, the one that had taken his father away from the crusade, and that, in time, would have made the entire panoply of empire, the navigators, the legions, the warp engines of the Mechanicum, even the Primarchs themselves, obsolete. No wonder it had been kept secret, a secret that had contributed so much to the years of suspicion and mistrust. There had been betrayal before Horus, that much was clear. Perhaps the fruits of that were only now becoming evident.
It was a failure, the Khan said. A dead end. We are left with what we see. Our wars, our blades, our mutants, our demons.
Jubal turned back to the starscape, a dry humor on his features.
Nonetheless, a failure that opened the path of heaven. Speak of it no longer, said the Khan, tiring of the memory. It was a tomb to many who should have lived to see the palace.
He fixed his eyes on the void, on the glittering belt of stars ahead. Somewhere among them, perhaps even visible now, was the throne world, within reach again after so many years of toil.
There will be trials ahead, he said. We have not witnessed the greatest of them yet, and only postponed the reckoning with my brothers. But for now, for a short while, I will not think on that. We must heal, mend our wounds, be ready to take up the blade once more.
Jagatai let a smile crease across his hawkish profile.
We kept the faith, Jubal, he said. We fought, we overcame, and now, at last, we are going home.
That was The Path of Heaven, written by Chris Rent, read by John Banks.
This work is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2016.